In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, this is Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. I'm going to be getting Josh on here with me in 1 second, and Josh can join us on the show. Let's see if we get him live with us here. Josh, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Cool. Cut a little close there with our hangout. Got to do that timing a little bit better, I think, because we got seconds into the show. So, Josh, we are live, so thanks for popping in.
Always.
Yeah.
I am the co-host.
Exactly.
I do have responsibility now.
Thank you.
The heavy is the head, you know, that wears the crown. Well, that's yours.
I'm on those lines. Right.
That be yours, actually.
It's just funny because, trying to do that. Anyone that's just maybe tuning in or coming on with us, today we sort of experimented with doing a live sort of video green room before the show to sort of talk about ourselves and all and what's coming on the show and everything. So I thought it went fairly good, Josh, because, you know, we've got to get the timing down a little bit better, I think, as far as us getting on there and getting on to Wild Dog Radio on time, you know, a little bit earlier. So, but I think it went pretty good, you know, and I think it's a good way for people to actually see us and even interact a little bit more with us.
Yeah, we're both getting our feet wet. I logged in using a different I'd set up that personality and I lost it. I don't even know where it is. Been having a lot of trouble with accounts and passwords this week.
You need this thing. It's a robo form.
What is it?
No affiliation. Robo form. It's like an automatic like a password keeper thing. Yeah. It's
nice.
Passwords
okay.
And
is it an app?
No, it's well, software goes on your computer, but it can go from one computer to another. It can be on your phone if you want it. Whatever you want to do. Different
it,
versions
what's
of it.
The security on it? I mean, it tells all your passwords. I mean, that's
got to
be.
Well, I'm hoping that it's good security since I've been using it for quite a while. So.
All right. I'll check it out.
Yeah, hopefully it's...
I was going to get yellow notepad.
Yeah.
That's high-tech. But it is secure as long as you don't leave it around.
Right. Yeah, as long as you keep it with yourself. Exactly.
Right.
Just want to mention, of course, that this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. Go visit them at emsmanager.net for a free trial of their innovative and easy-to-use EMS employee and scheduling management software. So,
So this is the time. I mean, it's Tim. Did you hear back from Tim? Because I'm sure he'll have a point to make.
No, I did not, actually. I did not hear back from him, but who knows? Maybe he'd be listening in. He'll jump in on it for. I mean, you know, here's the thing. You know, today we've talked about being called ambulance drivers, right? Before, and you know, it's a very sensitive subject. You know, for a lot of people. I mean, you can go on to Facebook at any given time for the most part and find some sort of discussion on one page or another about what we're called, you know. You even got people who commented about who role at an agency is actually just being a driver. They're not an EMT, they're not a paramedic, and their role is being a driver. And even they don't like being called an ambulance driver. They want to be called emergency medical, emergency driving technician or something along those lines. You know what I mean?
That's a good. How do you, as a medic, how do you feel about the MVO wanting to be called a technician?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, there's like...
It's just funny to me because I think that comment and that sort of line of thinking, I think ends up being sort of the rub that we end up having here, you know, where people get so caught up in what they're called, you know, as opposed to what they do. And, you know, I know the argument is there, and I think Tim's made it before, and I've heard other people make the argument. They don't care I don't care what I'm called. I do drive an ambulance. It's part of my job. Call me whatever you want. I'm secure in knowing what I do. And I feel that way. I don't get offended by it personally. But I get my thing is the perception that title has upon the profession.
You know? I agree.
It's not necessarily the individual. You call me whatever you want. I mean, you know, I don't really care about that. You know, you can call me an EMT if you want. It doesn't matter. It's just thing is the perception that it has, you know, to the general public who don't know what exactly it is. They don't know.
Well, it goes beyond that. And, you know, if you've been watching the news and watching CNN, you know, the Zimmerman trial is hot and on, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on about, you know, the different vocabulary and words and the strength of words, the power of words, because of the sum of the words used you know, especially they're saying there's an entire special tomorrow about the N-word and, you know, who can use it and who can't.
It's
the
buried.
Idea that, what?
I thought it got billed with the name. Bury it?
No, it is back out fresh and hot.
Oh, it dug out. So I guess,
you know,
all the zombie stuff, I guess it dug itself out of the grave.
Essentially, and you know, it's and some people don't want it to die because they think there's a lot of power in that. And I saw an argument earlier that said there's a power in it, you know, in the idea that it sort of surrounds a descriptive nature with a history of abuse around it. You know, not in the same. It doesn't carry the same. It carries more power, like a word like cracker. You know, or something along that, doesn't carry the same power because it doesn't have the same history. And I think that the acknowledgement, and I don't want to get in a whole thing about the N-word or disparaging remarks along that way, but the parallel that I wanted to draw is that it's not bullshit, that words do sometimes have power. And when you're dealing with a world, you know, an entire profession that's trying to really still to this day, 40 years later, 50 years later, get its feet underneath it, you know, get some stability, get some acknowledgement and understanding of who we are, what we do, and, you know, a little respect, please, you know, so to say. Words do have power. And I think that when you down, you know, I understand Tim's idea. Well, I'm a professional, and it doesn't matter what you call me. It matters on what the job I do. You know, there is a part of that argument that's true, but when you're trying to raise an entire profession and get a level of acknowledgement for that profession.
It's almost a bad thing where we're trying to take these steps forward and
that,
you know,
shit holds us back.
Well, right, because you're talking about how we want to do treatments and procedures that are evidence based, that are research based, and we talk about, you know, things, you know, advanced techniques like intubation, where we get all bristled up if they talk about taking that away from paramedic level, you know, skill levels and all. But yet, you know, we're not. The thing is that when we go by this ambulance driver, you know, name tag. Would, you know, how can we be expected to be taken seriously if we're allowing that to happen, you know, and almost at times embracing it, you know?
I agree. I mean, there's a point when the word has power, when the word frames us and defines us, and even though it's the deeds we do that truly define us, it's all a PR. It's all about public relations and how the public views us. You know, they view, call, you know, every, you know, we talk about this. It's like people in trouble call 911. They expect help to arrive. Ask them to define that help, whatever it is that they need. That's a big bag of tricks you got to carry, whatever it is that they need. And when you talk about the medical world, you know, I'm trying to get a guest on right now, and I haven't really mentioned it to you. I guess I'll let it out here. Somebody that is very involved with the EMS community in teaching and instruction. He's very involved in teaching the aspects of early recognition of some coronary problems that can really ruin your day, both you as a technician and for the patient. And early recognition of these allows you to be ready for treatment and gives you a better outcome, of course. And sure. This guy during this class, and I met him during a class, and this guy during this class, and I won't say who he is yet, but he basically said that we are – think of what we're responsible for. We're not – you know, people who don't know compare us to nurses because we're somewhere – high middle rung of the medical hierarchy. We're underneath doctors, but we're above, you know, people who take your blood pressure, and there's this no man's land that we sort of exist in. But the truth of the matter is, what do we have to be responsible for? Can a nurse diagnose you and then treat you? Does a nurse have to know 50 different ailments that the possibility of emergency is and what the avenues for treatment of that? You know, not commonly. And you know, for the most part, in the general nursing profession, they have to ask permission before we give a drug. We're expected. It's not even that, you know, we're sitting there as an option. We're expected to go and sure. recognize what the disease is, what about, the pathology, and treat it.
Right. Think about protocols. If you end up not doing something that was in a protocol, you get questioned as to why you didn't do it. You were expected to give a drug, and maybe you didn't give it because you felt the patient might have had a worse outcome from giving that drug, and you don't give it, and you have to sit there and justify why you didn't give it. You know,
right. And that's the point. You have to justify why. And so that turn that around, that's your responsibility to have that knowledge, to be able to act upon that knowledge and be able to be correct. That's a lot of weight on your shoulders. Is that fair now to call you an ambulance driver?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like I said, you can go with the thought process of, okay, yes, that's one part of my job. I drive an ambulance, but no one's calling us, you know, IV starters or, you know, EKG sticky pasters or, you know, needle stickers or anything like that, right? And that's all part of our jobs as well, you know. And what was the graphic I saw, the meme I saw on Facebook with that, you know, they had some kind of ambulance driver thing, and they said, you know, let me go ahead and contact the fire truck driver and the police car driver, you know, for help too.
Right.
You know, and it just, you know, it's the type of thing that to me, the biggest element of it, beyond just our own sort of, you know, people getting their feelings hurt, you know, or being called it is.
And it's not about that. I couldn't give a crap about my feelings being hurt.
Yeah.
I give a crap about the perception on it because I've said this a long time. You know, it's the perception follows the money. And the money is the key to what we do. And you know, if you have somebody call a cop, you know what that means. Somebody call a fireman, they know what that means. But in the end, who do the cops and the firemen call? They call us.
Yeah.
You know, they call EMS. And how many times, you know, I was telling you before about the redeployment and stuff like that, and I was working 911, and it dawned on me that, you know, there is this unit with a violent EDP, a guy with a knife who is cutting himself, all right? They're calling the cops, and they're asking for an ETA. And you know what the dispatcher came over in a sort of an angry, like, you should know better format? The police don't give ETAs. Oh, well, that's nice. You know, they're an important service as well. I'm not downplaying them. You know, they have a role. They have equipment. They have training in order to deal with certain things. Yes, on an occasion, we do call them. But more often, it's the other way around. You know, they have an aide. They call their dispatcher, send a bus, and then we're dispatched. And then what's the call that comes over 30 steps after your dispatch, Jim?
Yeah.
You got an ETA?
And it's funny you say that, because I get that a lot with not so much the police by me, but a lot of the fire personnel that get on scene, you know, and they're asking for ETAs. And I, you know, it's the same type of thing. You know, we don't have the luxury of asking them for an ETA. You know, and it's like...
And it's all about the pecking order.
Yeah.
You know? Are we satisfied with being on the lowest level?
But the funny part about it is that a lot of times when they're on these scenes and they're asking for ETAs because they need it there because there's something going on, and then they print run of their own sort of, I guess, checklist on what to do before we get there. They're done. They've taken the blood pressure. They've given
right.
the oxygen.
They put the oxygen on, and they created the circle of death.
Right, exactly. So now they're all standing around. So now, right. you know, where the hell is this ambulance, you know? You know, so you end up sort of getting that pressure. And the same thing for the police. I think that's why the police do it as well. You know, a lot of times there's a lot more police than there are, you know, ambulances, and they get to the scene quicker and
follow the money.
Contact
the money.
Whoever called, and you know, it ends up being that after a while, there's only so much they can do, and if there's a critical patient there, you know, yeah, they're asking for an ETA, because I think sometimes it lets whoever's there see them doing something, you know, and showing you know, the effort of us. You know,
I'm pushing this black button on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm speaking into
But that's where we go back once again. We go back to the perception. You know, it's the perception. It's not what the public knows. It's what they perceive as being done. And at that point, something's being done to them. Oh, he's calling like where the ambulance is. Okay, he's making sure that this time. Okay, they're making sure the ambulance is on the way. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one thing.
Don't worry, ma'am. Help is on the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, you're sort of, you know, and I think that sort of, you know, allowing, and I say allow, not a whole hell of a lot we can do about it, besides something along the lines of not using it on ourselves, not embracing it under any circumstances, not saying, oh, what the heck, you know, it is part of my job, what, you know, what do I care, call me, whatever. You know, should we be correcting everyone out there that calls us, and then, you know, some of
how much do you already know the answer to what I'm going to say?
Well, I'm sure you're arrogant, so you correct everybody, you don't care.
No, I do care. I mean, you know, come on, really. I've always said it that you should correct when you have the appropriate time and appropriate space for a teachable moment.
Yeah. Well, some people, yeah,
you know,
then
there are times.
Yeah, there are times when that's not really the best.
Absolutely.
Time on the call, not the best time to be sitting
right.
there going, wait a second, I'm not going to be.
You just pronounced a loved one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the time to, correct.
Yeah, it's not the time to start.
Maybe. I'm just guessing here.
Might be the best time to start educating, you know.
Yeah, really. I couldn't save them because they're dead now, but I'm actually a paramedic, and my responsibility is actually to bring people back to life. So you may want to call your lawyer now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, might not be the right time to broach that subject. But, you know, when somebody's standing around, and I've always said it, you know, more importantly, what are we trying? We're fighting an uphill battle of public perception. So who's the low-hanging fruit here? Who's easy targets? Easy targets are friends and family. Because how many of your friends and family really don't know the difference or discount, you know, what you do?
Yeah.
I mean, I've told this story before about, you know, we were sitting around at a family gathering, and my sister-in-law said, oh, you know, well, it's a good thing the police are there because they can handle that because your job isn't that dangerous. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my job isn't that dangerous, right, you know, and it's sort of another thing, you know, another pet peeve of mine to shadow from last our last episode was that I didn't mention. How come line of duty deaths in EMS, you know, a cop gets killed, and it's always a tragedy when a service member, regardless of what their profession, gets, you know, dies on the line of duty. Okay, they gave their all. You know, all give some give all. But how many times, you know, do you see them pop up on Facebook or pop up in EMS One or you know, the fire news or something about a first responder, an EMS first responder losing their life? And if you go to the National EMS website, National Memorial EMS website, they have a whole page of line of duty death. How many times do you hear about that in the paper or see it on the news? Like, never. I mean, are we not even worth mentioning when somebody gives the ultimate, you know, makes the ultimate sacrifice?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the time you see that happening, any kind of blurb you do see, it's because of a helicopter incident, you know.
And it's usually only local news.
And I think that might be because, you know, it's a different, most of the time when a police officer dies is because they were shot or killed in a violent act, as opposed to most of the time when somebody from EMS, you know, gets killed, it's because of an ambulance accident or a helicopter crash. You know, it's not because they've been shot to death or whatever. I mean, we had an incident up here where they were shooting firefighters and stuff like that, and that made the news for a little while, you know, because these guys are getting shot, you know.
Right.
But, you know, the stuff gets, you know, squashed a little bit, you know.
And the question is, you know, if it hadn't been for the school shooting as being so close to that, would that have even made the news?
Yeah.
You know, the national news, would that even hit there? And,
yeah,
of course, you know, I don't, you know, it was firefighters. I don't remember if there was any EMS that was killed in that incident.
I don't think so, no.
Right. So, you know, not to take away from that incident, but what does it matter if you're serving, if you're in a line of duty? You know, firefighters from around the country, when they die in an accident, I mean, even a heart attack after the job, that sometimes gets play in the national news.
I think it's what sells the views. You know, it's what gets people to the channel, to the website, to the newspaper, to whatever it is, that's what ends up selling. I mean, I think about daily, I mean, I belong to the EMS One newsletter, the GEMS newsletter, and
right.
And I get, you know, numerous emails a day from them,
right,
their news feeds.
Right.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the title that they're giving is, they try to sensationalize it a little bit, you know.
What?
To get you to open the email, to get you to go to the website.
But what's the takeaway from that? So if it's a police officer killed or it's a firefighter killed, even if the guy is out of shape and a coronary looking for a place to happen and he finds his time in the sun, so to speak, that makes the news. When EMS dies, it doesn't. So what the takeaway is, we're really not worth it.
Well, I think part of that, dude, I think is something that goes on in EMS is we don't have, you know, very good PR. We don't have people in charge of that. You know, fire departments and police agencies, you know, across the country have people who are in charge of public relations. And it's public relations for stuff like that, public relations for jobs that they've done. This is why when you've got things that go on in a certain area and, you know, an infant, let's say, goes into cardiac arrest and the firefighters get there and they, you know, how they revive the kid, you know.
Right.
Or even that don't, and they just start CPR, and then the paramedics get it there afterwards and transport the child, and they get the pulses back. The fire department, you know, public relations, you know, arm are going to make it sound like and make it look like the fireman did everything. So then when
right.
that's when, and then when the blurb comes out in paper, the people that write the newspaper, these articles, don't realize it. You know, they're writing it based upon what sort of whatever press release they're getting, whatever, you know, blurb they're getting from the public relations area. I mean, it was a recent post on a blog and back and forth between, I think it was Skip Kirkwood, I think. Yeah, they got to look it up, but the guy called us ambulance drivers, and they went back and forth. You know, there was a whole thing with...
That was because an ER doc came to our defense. The person who wrote the article saying, hey, you know what, you should know a little bit more and respect the profession a little bit more, was an ER doc who wrote that. Who wrote the thing? Skip brought it out to the either knew the guy or found or saw it and brought it out to the general awareness.
Yeah.
But you know, full circle back. So the question that we ask is, what's the damage? Is there a problem? Is a rose by any other name still a rose? And I maintain that using a sort of dumbed down term to describe what we do is damaging. And I come from sort of that counter angle to say, you know what? Because public perception is so freaking important and it's confusing enough. It's like John wrote in the chat room. He said, I'm a basic emergency medical technician. And, you know, I was looking at that, and even if I sit back from the computer, that's a line that takes up the entire length of the chat. And it's a lot. It's a lot to verbal, a lot to put in your mouth. You can't say it with
you can't say the public
easily.
Understand what that means. What does that mean, basic? You know, you
right.
I mean, listen, if I'm having a heart attack,
the same
if somebody
as
says
an ER tech?
Yes, if I'm having a heart attack and some guy comes over to me and he goes, hey, sir, I'm here. I'm a basic emergency medical technician. I'd be like, basic? I want the advanced guy.
Right. And you're using advanced because vocabulary is singed into.
Right.
I want, you know, the professional. I want whatever basic
yeah.
is.
Right.
You know?
I want the basic. I don't want somebody basic. I want somebody that's not
yeah.
basic.
What, you're just learning?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of the problem, I think, that goes along in line with everything with this, is trying to come up with something to, you know, agree
on something. Why come up with something? We have, you know, you just get the mix in the world to back off and to let up a little bit and share the name. Say, you know what, it's okay for everybody to be called medic. You know, you want to differentiate that with basic and advanced, great, but you're still a medic. So that old back cry, you know, Joe's been shot, you know, medic, call the mix, get the medics here. It's a universal thing. And in the Army, the medic have a very different role. They do a lot of different things that we don't.
Yeah.
And do some things, and we do a lot of shit that they don't, but they're
right.
still called medics. You know, and
yeah.
and it comes down to what is in the name, and
well,
I say a lot.
There's two points I want to make before we wrap up tonight and talk about it a little bit, but I just want to talk about the sponsor quick. While I'm doing this, if anyone listening wants to give a call real quick and give their opinion on it, feel free to call us. You can call us toll-free. It's 877-217-3924. And just let us know where you come from and what certification level you're at, and we can talk a little bit about tonight's topic. But
Don't be shy, hit that keyboard.
Exactly. But I want to mention, like I said before, this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. They really have been consistently helping EMS agencies save time and energy with their innovative web-based software for staff scheduling and management. It's a mobile web app. It's accessible from smartphones and other mobile devices with an easy-to-use web interface. It's viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web. You can check your own schedule. Managers and staff can both oversee, manage, and make changes to employee schedules from anywhere. Scott Sigerfus, who's the lead paramedic supervisor in multi-township EMS in Indiana, said that employee scheduling for them used to be a part-time job, actually, by itself, but now they're using EMS Manager. They have the entire month of March scheduled just a couple of hours. So they were excited about it. He's very excited about the accountability aspect of it. And, you know, the fact that the time clock integration is also offering him a lot more accountability as well. So, you know, it is affordable. As I've always mentioned before, and pricing is based on the size of your organization. And because it's web-based, the employee scheduling software is located in the cloud, so there's no additional IT costs to worry about. And there's always free training, there's always free tech support, and free system software updates. If you want to try the system out for yourself, check it out. It's free. It's customizable. It's a trial of EMS Manager at emsmanager.net. And finally, I just want to thank EMS Manager for sponsoring EMS Office Hours and the other shows from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and the managers through the sponsorship and the support of what we do. So go show your support for them. Take a few minutes and be sure to sign up for the free trial at emsmanager.net. Show them that you appreciate their support by giving the software a try. And visit them again. It's emsmanager.net. It's a LaTeX EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. If you do sign up, guys, be sure you tell them that you heard about it right here on EMS Office Hours from Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp. So, other thing I want to mention, too, if anybody out there wants to give a quick little shout-out to the show, you can leave on the blog at emsofficehours.com. I have a blog post there I did the other day, and it's just a way for you to get your name, your number, and stuff like that. You know, to be able to leave a short little blurb, something where you can say, hey, this is Josh Knapp, and you are listening to EMS Office Hours, or this is paramedic Jim Hoffman, and you are listening to EMS Office Hours, or something like that. So it gives your name and your certification, maybe your agency, your website, whatever it is, and just say that you are listening to EMS Office Hours. Go to the blog, emsofficehours.com, and you can see the link there to the phone number. Just leave a message on the tape line, and don't worry about making a mistake. I will go ahead and edit it if I need to, and I want to work it into the show coming up soon. So I got a few already, so I want to get a couple more so we can be able to...
What's the number again, Jim?
I don't know. I don't know what's on my head. What are they? You know how many phone numbers I remember? I remember every phone number.
That one I would think you would remember, but that's just me.
No, I don't remember that one.
Okay.
I can look it up.
Right.
I see Dave is in the chat room. Dave, thanks for popping in there.
Dave, hey.
And it's cool. It's over here. Remember, because they're putting your Russian too. Yeah. And this, right. And Dave, you're right. This is what Josh had just talked about. You know, leave the certification battles to what we do as far as hiring, firing, describing certain skill levels and things like that to each other, and let the patients, you know, let the public know that we're all called paramedic, you know, instead of having this issue. You know?
Paramedic, I guess. I would just even cut it short and say medic. You know, what is it? It's just a name at this point. But we're trying to create an identity.
Yeah.
And you know, I was thinking about this, Jim, while you were during our break. you know, when you call the fire department, they send a fire truck, and out of it comes firemen. And this is part of the problem of perception that we experience. So when you call a when you call the police, they send a police car, and out of it come policemen.
Right.
You know, when you call an ambulance, that doesn't work for us. You know,
right.
There's we don't. What are we, ambulance men?
Yeah, I know.
So
no, we're ambulance drivers. Oh, here come the ambulance drivers.
Right. So,
but now here's the two points I want to make. I don't want to go on too much about it, it's hard to, and we're not going to be the ones to decide for EMS what the hell we're called. You know, people, who are those two guys trying to tell me what to call us? Who do you think they are? But what I do want to mention is when we talk about things like ambulance driver and being called that, you know, I mentioned this in the show notes, and you know, how much of that do we actually own when we have, you know, Facebook pages that talk about how we're a taxi, you know, and have sort of these negative
meat wagon.
Yeah, like sort of these negative sort of Facebook pages about the nonsense that we do and that we just, you know, a taxi ride, and they cross out the word ambulance, they put taxi over it, and I get it. I know it's sort of a humorous thing, and I get all that. I mean, there was a time years ago where I had, you know, we used to wear the save bar under your shield. I had a little taxi cab, you know, symbol.
Yeah, I have.
Bar, you know what I mean? Like an idiot.
Right.
You know what I mean? But you know, but and I get this. There's a level of humor in that. You know,
right.
But
it was definitely.
But I wonder when you see that, you know, and these are public pages that the public sees, you know, how can we do that and then turn around and insist that we're not called, you know, an ambulance driver or, you know what I mean? And people say, oh, I'm not an ambulance driver. I drive a big expensive taxi cab. You know. So it's like, I wonder, like, how much that sort of just keeps this going, you know? It doesn't promote the change in it, you know.
The change has to come from within, and I'm going to say it again. If I don't say it in every episode, it probably doesn't count anymore. But we own it.
We have to
stop fighting each other, start getting on the wagon, start understanding what direction we need to go as a profession. Don't bitch that you make a low salary, or don't bitch that you have to work three different jobs to make ends meet. That's because of the respect that we get from the public world.
Yeah, among other things.
Well.
And the other thing I want to mention, too, is, you know, when you talk about a lot of calls that we get, right, a lot of times we don't really have a need for even an ambulance to be there, right, BLS or ALS, right? A lot of the calls that go on are just total nonsense. There's nothing we can do for them, you know, short of taking a vital sign. And then it ends up being that all we really are doing for the patient is driving the ambulance.
Holy crap. How many times you RMA'd somebody who just wanted their blood pressure checked?
Yeah.
Did you check their blood pressure?
Well, if that's what they wanted.
But so what are we? Are we service maids? But are we service maids? Do we do anything? Is there a point when you say, excuse me, you just cost, you know, the community $1,000. I mean, somebody should really break down what the cost is for a mobile response. And, you know, I mean, if it's just the ambulance alone or much less, you know, multiple units being sent and to take your blood pressure, excuse me? I mean, that's one of the most expensive blood pressures I've ever seen. And we do it. Now, you know, at what point do we get to say, no, I'm not going to. You know, you can't call for that.
That's a whole other podcast. That's, you know, people's fear of litigation and skill levels that you know, the providers have. They're afraid to give anybody responsibility to say, you know, you don't need to be transported. you know, we've come, we've checked you out, we've evaluated you, and you don't need an ambulance ride. You don't need an ambulance to get to where you have to go. You can go to the hospital by yourself if you want, or you can go to a clinic with your doctor. You're not going to die, you know. But we're a long way before we get, I think, to that point. But my thing is when all we're doing is, a lot of times, is just driving them, and we're not doing a lot for them in the back of the ambulance, I go back to the perception. They're perceiving it as a ride to the hospital. They're not getting anything done. Nothing is happening to them. So when you have a big percentage of the calls we do where nothing is being done and all they're getting is a ride, all they're getting is driven, you know, this is why I think it also sort of, you know, adds up to the public,
right,
as well, is where they're seeing, oh, it's an ambulance driver. That's all they did was drive.
Comes back to the litigation thing. Comes back to the liability, because, you know, there are sometimes, you know, that somebody that you're driving to the hospital suddenly gets worse. And then, you know, it's a good thing that you were there. That was a true emergency. Now, is that probably 1/100th of all the just general transportation calls? And I'm talking about non-sick, you know, you're basically bringing somebody because they have the flu, because they have a bellyache, because they have something, you know, because they think they have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Because remember, those calls for high blood pressure, you still have to offer to take them to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know.
It's funny, Dave mentions in the chat about reimbursement. I saw something today in one of the Google feeds that I follow, and they talked about how a county was asking a region, I forget where it was, but they were asking the community if they are willing to pay for having the ambulances, you know, full time there. And it was something like $75 a year per person or per household or something like that to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the title was like, residents given an option to have EMS. I'm like, what? You know, I didn't read the entire thing to see where it was, but I just thought it was interesting. You know, you think about it, that sort of a price tag is $75 a year per taxpayer that they're going to get taxed for that.
Yeah. And they're up in arms about it.
And right, I mean, honestly,
you know, one of the first sayings that I learned when it came to community awareness and pay for EMS was the idea, the ready idea that, and this is still true today, that communities will pay more to haul your trash to the dump then take your grandma to the hospital.
You know, this is something else. That, you know, the whole paid versus, you know, volley sort of thing. And I saw some stats.
Are we shooting ourselves in the foot with volleys?
Well, you know, they posted this thing about how there's, you know, around 900,000 EMS providers, and something like 70-something percent of them are EMTs, 20-something percent are medics, and like 6% or something like that were EMTIs. And out of all these, there was something like three-quarters or something like that were volunteers. You know, and I'm saying to myself, yeah, well, that's, you know, three-quarters of volunteers, and that leaves the other quarter, you know, of us struggling to get more money and get paid for our services when everybody else is doing it for nothing. You know, and that's another argument altogether, but you're talking about, you know, getting reimbursed and getting paid for not just what we're doing as individuals, as a profession, but also, you know, reimbursed from insurance companies, you know, for the services, you know, making people pay when they're calling for these reasons. You know, like Dave mentioned, people are being told to pay for these services when they don't need the ambulance, you know, and there is some sort of a penalty attached to it, you know, then the calls will be more emergent when we get them. You know, it won't be this need to sit there and constantly cover your ass on everything, you know. And I saw a thing as well. Did I mention this last week? But the fire company up here, actually upstate New York, they're going to the fire company, it's a fire paramedic sort of combo thing, and they want to start doing, you know, dialysis pickups and stuff that they can bill. You know, they want to be mm-hmm. able, they want to be able to bill. And there's another place.
And everybody goes, oh yeah, bill, and that's the way to collect money because they're all strained and stressed on how do they fund this thing of coming to your location with medical help. Yeah. And the thing is how would you feel if the cops? I mean, you know, the cops tried billing, the fire department tried billing. 100 years ago, and you got Tammany Hall, you know, and you got, you know, when you had to bill in terms of, or you had to pay in terms of having a crime investigated. That wasn't the best thing for the community, is what they found.
You know what it is, though? I think, you know, I know there are some fire companies, especially Bali, you know, volunteer fire agencies that will, you know, if you're going to the same institution, the same let's say place of business where it's constantly has a fire alarm going off, or there's constantly the first couple of times they'll go, they check it out, it's a false alarm, it's an electrical thing, it's a battery, or whatever the case may be. After a certain point, they tell them that, you know, we come any more than whatever, you're going to start, and whatever, however many times in a certain time frame, you're going to start getting, we're going to bill you, you know, a fee to respond, you know, because you've been told that your fire alarm has an electrical issue and you need to get it taken care of, you know. When I say we're not going to come, we're going to come, but you're going to get, you know, a fee for it. There was an article I saw where they are now, the fire departments are some places not going to respond to with EMS anymore to, you know, stuff like they could do in the city, you know, these first responder type calls. And the chief's comment in the article was pretty much, well, we're not going to respond to the person who's hurt their finger 3 days ago. We're going to, you know, we're not responding to those types of non-emergent calls. We're going to leave that for the ambulance runs. And I'm like, you know, it's just a sort of attitude right there that kind of, you know, you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, it's okay to waste the ambulance. It's okay to put the ambulance, you know, personnel at risk, you know, to respond to a call like that, you know, and instead of addressing the fact that those calls are even happening at all, you know. So that's pretty much my, you know, my little soapbox there with that. I mean, I'm not sure where the answer is on that type of stuff, but still.
That's a great point, Jim. I mean, when you talk about the risks that we put forward in responding to a call, you know, again, that was something else that I found. You know, the SIC is a lights and sirens response. What does that do? I mean, that puts the crew at you know, lights and sirens by definition means that you have to get through. So you are using these warning signals to say that you're a vehicle moving through traffic and you're probably going to be going against traffic. And so, but that puts the crew at risk. And what's the value of that? I mean, are we just meat in the seat, or do we have a greater value than that? And that, you know.
Well, that goes back to the volunteer pay thing as well. I mean, you know, you talk about a value to that. It's like, you know, how much is every individual community willing to pay for EMS? You know, a lot of them are not willing to pay, so the volunteers are left to do it. But you know, unfortunately, it's not against the volunteers and what their mission is. But, you know, honestly, nowadays, to me, I don't think that model is really working anymore for EMS. When, you know, I hear it consistently, you know, the tone's going out 3, 4, or 5 times for a local volunteer agency to go respond to an abdominal pain, to respond to an evaluation or an MVA, things like that. Because, not necessarily because the people don't want to respond, but because they're working 2 jobs. They have, you know, they have to stay home and watch kids. And it's not like it was, you know, back in the day when it worked, you know, much, much better. You know, and I think communities need to start putting up the money to pay for EMS, just like they pay for the garbage men. Just like
Listen,
they pay for the
There's a lot of changes that have happened. The responsibilities that you have as a technician going out, what you have to know, is a lot more.
I mean,
it used to be the primary drug of EMS was diesel. You know, that is no longer the case. I mean, you know, you as a medic, it's drummed into you that, you know, if somebody's having a heart attack, you're supposed to be working that job up right where you are and, you know, not delaying treatment. The whole idea is not to delay the critical minutes of treatment. And, you know.
But I hear nothing. But all you hear, though, is nothing but delay. It is a delay. It's constantly
right.
a delay.
What's the, and then they tell you that. And then what's the metric they measure you by? How soon did you get the patient to the hospital?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, I know there are areas that are so, you know, rural, it's hard to have a paid EMS staff, you know, there. But
is that an excuse? They have paid police?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you can. You don't have to. Maybe you can contract it, you know, and you can contract.
The problem is the nature of what EMS is. EMS is a singular problem. It's an individual problem. And what I mean by that is that if you have a fire, that's a community problem because that fire could spread to other buildings, other properties. If you have crime, that's a community problem because even though that crime may be inflicted on a single individual, the individual who is perpetrating the crime can pick on other people of the community. If you have a heart attack, heart attacks aren't contagious.
Yeah.
You know, so it's only one person. So what's the value of that one person?
Yeah, well, it that's the way it works, of course, until somebody that, you know, is important, you know, and then that's when it's like, oh, my God, you know, how could this happen where I live type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when everybody wants to start, you know, changing their tune because now it affected somebody that they know, so... All right, listen, Josh, we're going to wrap it up there. I don't want to go on too much with it. I do appreciate Dave, John, people in the chat room taking part tonight and giving some feedback and joining the conversation. Of course, it always keeps the show going when we can talk about what your comments are and bring it into the live discussion. I enjoy doing that. So I appreciate you popping as usual. Don't forget, guys, we're doing this green room video and Google Hangouts from now on. We're going to try to do that at the beginning of every show, 10 minutes or so before the live show. You can jump in and talk with Josh and I about the upcoming topic and what we're doing in EMS and all that good stuff. So keep an eye out for that. I want to welcome some new Twitter followers.
You should pop into the green room anyway, just to sample the free peanuts and
right.
We have an open bar.
Well, a lot of times we have to be able to have the green room and put like bottled water out and stuff like
right.
that.
Right, absolutely. And there's also the swag bag. Don't forget that. So
definitely.
People should be in that green room.
Definitely. Well, again, welcome to the new Twitter follow. We have Sulfic. Suffolk, New York State, SPP, which stands for Suffolk Regional Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Paramedics. They are following us on Twitter. Nico Rabbit, FRNTV, which I thought was following me before. Maybe they unfollowed me and they followed me again, so I welcome them back. Mike Hopkins, Sean Knack, some Arabic name with symbols that I can't read. Who else we have? Frank Foley, Eagle Medic. Marjorie Majerink, Fire and Cop Shop, Extreme Medicine Expo, Elena Anabith, Jeremiah Sushi, Mark Reader, Ben Jones, Shonda, I Am Ginger. I don't know what that is. And then, of course, we got Rob Fahrenholt, Brian James, and Richie Wall. I think we have a couple other ones, but I'm going to end it there so I don't read my entire Twitter follower thing. But those are the most recent people following us on Twitter. Go check them out, guys. If you go to my Twitter account, I am at EMS Safe. check my followers out there and follow them and let them know that I gave them a shout out here on the show so that they know that their following is appreciated. All right, Josh, that's it. I guess we shall talk to you next week.
All right, buddy. Stay safe.
All right, everyone, that's it for tonight's show. Thanks for listening in. Be sure to send me your comments, questions, concerns, or suggestions on a topic to jhoff@emsseo.com. Until next week, as always, Jim Hoffman, stay safe.